painting to photography, from beadwork to woodworking, KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
When you break a leg, you go to the doctor and they put a cast on it. Everyone can see that you have a cast on and they know that you have a broken leg. It is obvious that you've been hurt and now you are healing. Sometimes people can have mental or emotional injuries or issues as well, but that isn't so obvious. In addition, there can often be a negative stigma surrounding mental illness. Local photographer Joy Davis Ripley's new photo exhibit titled Visible, Invisible, Life with Mental Illness seeks to dispel the stigma surrounding mental illness by making what is often invisible, visible. Joy's project involves her subjects describing their experience with mental illness in their own words, and then she worked with them to create portraits to illustrate those feelings and experiences. The exhibit is at public launch in Winona, Minnesota through the month of February. I'm Bill Stoneberg with photographer Joy Davis Ripley on Artbeat.
Welcome to the show today, Joy.
Thank you for having me again, Bill.
For sure. It's great to have you back. And it was really cool to see the exhibit. And in fact, I also want to mention we have a couple guests today who participated in Joy's photography project. With us, we have Annie Morgan Kiefer. Hello, Annie.
Hi.
And we also have Mark Jacobson. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us today, guys. Joy, so just for people who may not have heard our first show about the topic, can you give us kind of a brief idea of what the photo project was about?
Sure. I looked for volunteers who would be willing to talk about their journeys with mental illness, and I interviewed them and took their portraits. And so the exhibition is a combination of their portraits and their excerpts from their interviews.
And you know what I thought was really interesting when I went to the gallery showing, a lot of times when there is written word along with photos or even paintings or stuff like that, a lot of times they're paired together, and this wasn't. It was on the other side of the room. There was one wall was all the statements and the other wall was the photos, which I thought was really interesting, you know, because then you got the power of their words alone just by itself, and then the power of the photograph by itself, you know? And I thought that was really cool and really powerful. What made you decide to do that, or how did that process come about?
So one main theme about this project has been the difference between what is visible and what is invisible. Mm-hmm. And I wanted the portraits on one side because that's what is visible, our faces, our outer selves to everyone as we go about our daily lives. And then on the other side of the gallery, separated from the portraits, are the words, and those represent our inner landscapes. That's what is invisible. That's what we try to hide so much of the time due to the stigma and shame centered around mental health.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. And it makes you think, you know, it makes you think. Annie and Mark, I'm kind of curious, you know, when you started this project, you know, when you entered it with Joy, did you know what you were going to say in your statements, or was that difficult to do? What was that like for you, putting that down into words, you know, your experience?
Well, for me, I've dealt with it for some time, having gone through training to become a certified peer support specialist, and also dealing with the drop-in center at Hiawatha Valley Mental Health Center. I've gotten used to expressing just what I've gone through and what it's taken for me to get where I'm at and how things are today.
Right.
So I'm quite used to at least letting people know that what I've gone through and what I'm still living with, and I'll have to deal with that for basically the rest of my life.
Right, right. So you have kind of been used to verbalizing it. Do you feel that helps, like, to be able to verbalize it and communicate to other people how it
works
for you?
Yes, I found it, especially now, because a lot of people have gotten, you know, got to know me enough to where I'll let them tell their story, and I'll sit and listen, and then let them know that they're not alone, that there are people out there. I may not be able to help them that day, but I know enough people in through the business to where I can direct them to other
right.
people.
Right, right. And I think it's important sometimes just to share and listen too. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's a big aspect of it, because most people that I have talked with and dealt with, they just want somebody to talk with so they can verbalize it themselves and able to hear it in their own words what they're going through, mm-hmm. and that itself helps them out quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. Annie, what are your thoughts on that?
I would second Mark as well. I feel like throughout my experience with my mental health journey, I've been able to identify my feelings, identify my experience and make it my own, and to kind of take the power back from it by identifying it. Joy had created some really thought-provoking questions, and so I had the privilege of doing my interview on my laptop. And so I could, you know, mentally prepare myself to sit down and think about those questions. It did take some coping ahead to really get in the proper headspace to properly identify those things, but it gave me the liberty to take it on when I felt able to, and then pack it up when I had enough. So I kind of went through it over a series of maybe several sessions of it, if you will. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, and I'm sure that, you know, it sounds like that would help a lot, to be able to put it down for a little bit, step away, come back to it when you're ready, right?
I mean, absolutely. And it gave me the ability to really be very intentional and put a lot of thought into that as
Right, okay. And I think that's a really important component of this, is that, you know, people out there who might be struggling with, you know, identifying things within themselves, or struggling with identifying how to deal with things, how to overcome things, and seeing how others deal with it and view it, I think that's extremely helpful to people. I think that's really cool. Joy, so how did you go about setting up the interviews? And, you know, Annie mentioned prompts or questions and things like that. What did you have prepared as far as that goes?
I had made a list of 10 questions that I was hoping that people would use to kind of begin thinking about their own personal mental health journey. And they had the option of answering all of them or answering just as few as they wanted. Some people did indicate to me that they were much more comfortable talking to me in person. I think especially people who had never met me before. And so some of the interviews, I met with people in person and we just talked about their journeys.
Mm-hmm. So did that, when you meet in person, does that cause the project to kind of evolve and take on a life of its own, or did you still like, I guess I'm kind of wondering, how open was it when you entered into this? You know, did you have a very exact idea, a specific idea of what you were going to get out of it, or did you just kind of let it flow and see what, you know, came out? Or
one thing that I really liked about how this project went is the collaborative nature of it. Mm. And when I started out, I knew that it would be a collaboration with people, because I wanted them to begin thinking about their inner landscape and seeing if we could capture that symbolically vis-a-vis their portraits.
Right.
One thing that I loved about both Mark and Annie is they were very, very much up for brainstorming and being creative and collaborating with me. And Annie in particular, she's someone who is extremely intelligent and very creative. And so during our photo shoot, she really got into it, and she was trying to express exactly how she felt on the inside. And I had the privilege of photographing so many wonderful portraits of her, and it was actually very difficult with Annie and with a few others to narrow those portraits down.
Right. I love that you mentioned collaboration a couple times, you know, because it seems to me like a project like this, you know, it's not just the person behind the camera who's pulling that trigger. It's the subject as well. You guys are creating this together. And I think that plays really well into the mission of it, too, because we have to come together as people in a community to really support each other in through things like this, you know?
Right. I do feel that we live in a culture that is fairly superficial. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I was hoping to do in a project like this was to hold space for other people's stories of trauma and mental illness and tragedy. And I have found in my own personal life that when others have held space for me and my stories, that I have experienced healing. And I was viewing this project very much as a way to witness suffering. And my hope was that the people who were participating were able to somehow reclaim their own voices, reclaim their own narratives. And in this way, I was hoping that some healing could come about. But I also want to stress that this project was very healing for myself on my own mental health journey. Okay. So it wasn't something that I did for the community. I hope that the community receives benefit from it, but it actually was something that I did for myself.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I have a sort of personal kind of philosophy and mantra. I say a lot, and I hope this doesn't offend anyone, but, you know, save yourself. Because in doing so, you can help lift up those around you as well.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
If you focus on yourself and healing and things like that, you know, you can bring others into that, I think. You know,
yes.
I think that's important, an important aspect to highlight. And then you mentioned, you know, when you were photographing Annie, that she had a lot of ideas. Annie, had you ever thought of, like, visualizing your journey before, you know, or, you know, like putting it into photos or visuals, you know, how did that work to start thinking about it in those terms?
You know, for me, when I'm in the middle of an episode, I always or oftentimes feel like this tiny little person in this very hollow shell. My body actually feels very heavy, very limp. I feel very empty, and it's exhausting to drag along this empty shell. And so just having that mental image that I kind of see myself in. And then, man, it was almost last summer when Joy and I kind of started talking about this and just kind of like this little brainchild of, hey, I'm thinking this, you know, is something that I want to take on. And then it started just kind of getting those wheels turning. So originally my idea was to be in a big empty warehouse and just be this really tiny person in an empty warehouse. And that evolved due to weather, due to the day that we were shooting, just all sorts of things. But the biggest thing was really I wanted to exemplify the anguish that exists in my head, dealing with my particular mental illness. A lot of what I live with is a battle in my mind. It's just I'm constantly at war with myself in my mind, and just to go about my day with a smile on my face, and people don't understand every little stimulus is a war. I have a choice of to feed into that or to use my skills and to combat that. And so it's just this, it's exhausting, and it's so anguishing. And so a lot of the portraits that we came up with, just that physical struggle, is something that I really wanted to dive into. And I think that we did a really, really beautiful job with that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, all the photos are amazing, you know, and there's so much you can get in, you know, get out of them and see in them and things like that. Mark, how about you? Like, what was it like to, you know, work with Joy and kind of visualize, you know, what goes on in your head? What are your thoughts on the, you know, the photos that came out of it, you know? How do you feel about that?
Well, the photos that I've seen are excellent pictures in that, and they showed just where I was at that point. And if somebody would have come up and asked me to be in that position, say like even 2 years ago, I probably wouldn't have done it, or even stepped up to even do as much talking about it.
Right.
Because I was still in the process of accepting what I had gone through and what it had taken for me to get to that point. And it's a point that I bring up now. Is as long as I'm comfortable with what's going on, then I can move forward.
Right, definitely. That's a good point. If you don't mind, can you share, like, how did you get to this point then that you were able to participate in this?
I've been in and out of treatment facilities for last 20 years, and as of would have been first part of January of 2013, I was to the point where I was contemplating suicide. And I remember going through some sessions with a therapist down in Caledonia, And I just so happened to reach out to him and told him I needed some help.
Right.
And the two people I talked to there were efficient enough to where they sat down with me, talked with me, and actually got me in to a facility within a week. And they worked with me to get to through that and then located to the residence I'm at now.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that I'm working with saw something in me that to where they actually started presenting stuff to me and asked if I wanted to do this or and they were believing in me mm-hmm. enough to where I said that there's something there to where maybe I should take a step back and look at this.
Okay.
And that the there is something more in that. And a lot from that then on, a lot of the depression started fading away that I deal with. And along with that, once the depression started away, the urges for self-medication that I did quite often mm-hmm. also faded away.
Oh,
and as I went through the training for the peer sports specialist, I was able to learn more about myself and that there is hope out there, and that at least my family and a number of friends, they held on to that hope for me until I could actually take and work with it more myself.
Right. And that's important to have that support around, I think, as well. You know, and also, I mean, the strength that you had to come forward and ask for help, that's, mm-hmm. I think that's really key too, which, I think this whole project can possibly be a beacon for people, you know, things like that.
I would love for that to happen. And Mark is talking about the importance of community. Mm-hmm. And one thing I've thought about a lot during this project is how I believe there's something in us humans that automatically starts dividing us into camps,
right.
Us versus them. Mm-hmm. And I think it's especially relevant when it comes to a topic like mental illness. I think that we, because of the stigma in society, I think that we can be reluctant to out ourselves as sufferers of mental illness, to admit to being in that camp. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I was hoping to do with this project was to try to start to break down these arbitrary divisions between us and them. There is no us and them. Everyone is dealing with mental health, and we are them, and they are us.
Yes, that's a very good point. Very good point. You know, and I think when we start to look at it that way as well, like you said, those divisions that aren't real divisions, when they fade away, you realize you become healthier yourself.
Right.
You
exactly.
know, yes. And I mean, we all help each other then, you know, no one stands alone, really,
yes.
is how, it, you know, it's just how it is.
Right.
You know, people might think that's the way, but it's not, you
and
know.
Something that Troy and I have talked about is, especially with the male aspect of it, I grew up in a family to where my parents and my grandparents, they didn't talk or express their feelings a whole mm-hmm. lot. And I know for a fact that my dad dealt with depression quite a bit. And to the fact that I never saw him actually express anything or even take and cry on occasions that a lot of people would break down and mm-hmm. have some faults.
Right.
And I've got brothers that are the same way right now that they're struggling to talk about what their issues are and what they're going through. And I've got a younger brother that... actually dealt with a suicide with another brother of mine mm-hmm. and how he's managed to stay on his path and sort of live through that is quite amazing in that. So I've got a lot of respect for the fact that the male aspect of it has changed somewhat to where mm-hmm. we can come out and actually start talking about it and being more open. Right. Due to that fact.
Right. I'm so glad, Mark, that you brought up this gendered acceptance of who is allowed to have mental illness in our society. Mm-hmm. And I really, really appreciate you and the other men in this project, because as difficult as it is for girls and women to admit to mental illness, how much harder mm-hmm. is it for mm-hmm. boys and men to admit to it? Mm-hmm. And we have all of these sayings in our culture, boys don't cry, and mm-hmm. just everything that we are continually encouraging mm-hmm. boys and men to not express emotion, and how absolutely devastating that is for men and their emotional lives.
And I think with that, men haven't been able to express themselves, that's where they fall into the self-medication aspect, and, yeah. and then the dual diagnosis aspect with the substance abuse, whatever it be, alcohol or drugs or whatever, mm-hmm. Falling into that trap, and then taking on the substance abuse as well as the mental health issues, that's the double trouble for anybody, and it's mm-hmm. even harder to come up out of versus just the mental health issues.
Right. And you know, when people are masking things with or self-medicating, things like that, you know, like you said, then now you have dual issues to deal with. And oftentimes what I've seen with friends of mine and things, that the underlying issues don't get dealt with then, you know, and they look at the other side and continue to not look within because, well, like you said, boys don't cry, boys don't show feelings, things like that, you mm-hmm. know. So I think this is a really important part of this progress and evolution that hopefully continues in society, you know, and we become more open with this stuff.
I hope so.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the things I think that we're talking about here is the difficulty in representing mental illness. It's so easy to see, for most of the time, it's very easy to see certain physical illnesses or mm-hmm. Physical mm. accidents that result in trauma. Like my daughter had a broken arm last summer and had to wear a big cast on her arm. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to mental illness, how do we represent it? How do we talk about it? I'm really hoping that this project can be another way in to that conversation that we should mm-hmm. all be having about mental illness and how it impacts us as individuals and right. also as a community.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've had friends in the past where it's like everyone's like, well, that guy's a jerk. That guy's a, you know, other words I can't say on the radio, but, you know, really the truth is that guy's hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, he's very hurt and he's acting out, you know, because of it and trying to mask it or whatever and not mm-hmm. deal with it, stuffing it, you know. And yeah, I think this is very important. Annie and Mark, were there any kind of surprises that came up when you were going through this project with Joy? You know, anything that you realized that you hadn't really thought about before or anything like that? If you want to share that.
For me, it was healing. And so my journey with this particular diagnosis started almost exactly 5 years ago. And so I kind of went through this healing journey, and I did a year of dialectical behavioral therapy and got to that other side. But the journey of being photographed and kind of using that method acting, if you will, to get back into that place was very healing. It was super therapeutic. And for me, it was reclaiming it rather than having this illness, if you will, claim me day after day and sitting in this, woe is me, I have this, and oh my gosh, it's just debilitating. But now I'm owning it. It's so beautiful when you can say, man, I'm really angry. And you're owning that anger. And all of a sudden, that anger, that intensity just lessens. And it was like that for me with this project. Being able to be an advocate for it and standing on the other side. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, I know Mark had mentioned this too, I never could have done this. I was angry about it. I was embarrassed, if you will. There's so much shame associated with living with borderline. Mm-hmm. And to be able to say, no, borderline doesn't own me, I own it, and this is what this looks like for me. And just as this community is progressing in this direction, just being able to have a name and a face attached to it so someone else in the community can say, hey, I have that too, and mm-hmm. it's okay.
Cool. So there's almost like you know, like we've talked about how the project can help others and things like that, but it was, mm-hmm. it sounds like it was very helpful for you to go through as well, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. That's really good. How about you, Mark? You know, is there anything that kind of surprised you along the way or that, you know, you learned through the process? Or?
A lot of the surprise that I had was that just to realize how much I've grown in just the last couple of years and
yeah.
and seeing that I've affected so many people and mm-hmm. seeing them grow, that it reflected back on me as to how much I've grown over
mm-hmm.
that time.
Right.
And now a lot of people might think I'm taking in bragging a little bit, but I enjoy actually going out and speaking to others about it and mm-hmm. Being open about it.
Right.
Where before I wasn't even open with myself.
Right.
So that the fact that I can and have opened up is enough of a surprise for me.
Yeah, yeah. And forgive me if I'm wrong, Mark, but it sounds to me like you're proud of yourself, and you should be. You know,
yes,
a little
I
more
am.
Than bragging. It's just it's. I think it's really something else when you feel like you're trudging along, and then you turn around and look back and see how far you've come. You know, you
yeah,
should be proud.
And that's where, for many years, that I didn't give myself enough credit for
mm-hmm.
what was going on, and I'd almost always would find ways to put myself down or to look at the negative aspect of the illness and what was going on with my life, and that I would actually push people away.
Mm,
and that's being able to accept it and to acknowledge what I've gone on is for me a big step.
Yes, definitely. And I'm also curious, Joy, as like, you know, the one behind the lens and the one kind of with the idea, is there anything that's kind of surprised you along the way that, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Even listening to Annie and Mark this morning talk about their journeys in this project, again, I just feel blown away by their courage, because what I asked Annie and Mark to do in this project and everyone else who participated
mm-hmm.
was not an easy thing at all to do. I basically asked them to out themselves in the most vulnerable way that they could imagine
mm-hmm.
in front of all of their friends, family, colleagues, strangers, community
mm-hmm.
members, and they stepped up to the challenge, and they're here today talking about this. They've been interviewed by Chris Rogers. They are just two amazing people, and I find both of them very inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of my own journey, I've been very surprised, pleasantly surprised by others who have displayed such courage. And I myself, part of the story of my bringing this project to completion has been my own struggle with mental health. And in November, my parents, who live in Tennessee, their town was struck by a tornado, and while their house was not hit, it was in an area of town that saw massive power outages. And before they were able to get their power back, they both became very cold, both became very sick with pneumonia, both were transported by ambulance to the emergency room, both were hospitalized, and the doctors weren't sure that either one would survive.
Oh, wow.
At the same time, both of my daughters here in Winona became very sick with pneumonia, and all of this just weighed so heavily on me. With my parents both in the hospital, I was put in contact with some old family members, some old relatives who were instrumental in the abuse of my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began having flare-ups again of my chronic PTSD. And it all became just a very real struggle. My mental health was severely impacted during this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I worried that I wouldn't be able to finish the project.
Mm-hmm.
But I have an amazing husband, who stepped up to the plate, really helped take care of the kids. I have amazing friends. And I was so inspired by the stories of the people who participated in this project.
Yeah, the whole thing is very inspiring, I think. Mm-hmm. I love it. And I just want to mention for people out there, Joy's exhibit, Visible, Invisible, Life with Mental Illness, is currently at public launch here in Winona. It will be through the month of February, and what do we figure, a couple days after February as well. So go to the public launch Facebook page, and you can find out more information there of when the gallery hours will be open, things like that. Or you can go to Joy Davis Ripley Photography on Facebook and find out some information there as well.
I've included a space in the exhibition that I'm hoping will turn into this interactive safe space for people. Ooh. I'm hoping that seeing stories of their community members will inspire others to want to tell their own stories.
Oh, yeah.
And so I've set up two small desks with tables and two small desks with chairs and pens and pencils and coloring pencils so that people can create, they can share their own stories. And I have a little jar called My Story, and what I would like to do is start taking out of the jar some of the papers that people have put in and display them in a photographic book so that people can flip through and read their stories, and hopefully will become inspired to get rid of the own silence in their own lives, to start talking more about mental health and start sharing more.
Right. Oh, wow. That's fantastic. I love that idea. You know, and that's the cool thing. This project, you know, like right away when we spoke, I think it was last summer, you know, it seemed like a really great project and that it would, you know, there's so many benefits that can come out of this, but it seems like there are other benefits popping up along the way, you know, like, oh, wow, this could really turn into a really cool kind of a continuous thing almost, you know?
Well, I think that Winona has been hit hard in recent years. Mm-hmm. There has been a string of suicides. Winona Health lost its behavioral health unit. Mm-hmm. And our community, we are in pockets, I feel, of isolation. And if this exhibition can help people to find the courage to step outside of that isolation and begin talking more, and if there are any long-term benefits, if this could start other conversations and other projects in town, that would be amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And one other thing I wanted to touch on today, Annie and Mark, if you guys don't mind, could you read your statement for us, and then people can get an idea of what is at the gallery. And since it's radio, they can't see the photos, but at least we can give them this side and maybe help some folks out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I am constantly at war with my mind, every minute of every day. It's debilitating. Any stimulus, whether it's the expression on someone's face or the tone of their voice, can make me feel rejected or judged. I have emotional hyperreactivity, and I can feel a lot of distress. My emotions are so intense that they take over everything. I'm constantly battling the voices inside my head that come from lies I believed in order to survive as a child. Nearly all of my life, I have been living with lies that I believe were truths. The voices behind the lies are deafening. Sometimes I feel like I'm an empty shell, with the negative voices echoing in the desolate space. I push others away before they can leave me, and I impulsively act out in anger to protect myself. And then I sit in shame for my actions. It is exhausting. I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder 4 years ago. I went through stages of grieving as I coped with a shift in my identity and struggled with the stigma of BPD. I have been trained in dialectical behavioral therapy skills, but each day requires constant discipline and practice of those skills. My mind still wins at times. I'm learning that even the smallest and slowest steps are progress. I've learned that self-care is not selfish. At the end of the day, a strong embrace without words and being validated for the way I feel are the most calming. I have a small tribe that I can be vulnerable with and completely honest with. and I have a and I find a sense of peace and prayer in my faith in God. But still, there is forever a broken, wounded little girl inside of me, and she holds strong to the lies. I worked for years to heal her, to heal beyond my BPD. I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy.
Thank you. Wow. How about you, Mark? Are you worried?
I've been living with depression since around the age of 5. Didn't have anybody to turn to, and I began self-medicating at the age of 14 with alcohol. Part of my own recovery is helping others, and I want others to know that they are not alone. They may not know how to ask for help. I didn't know how to ask for help myself for a long time. Over the years, I've gotten help, and I've also self-sabotaged. Sometimes the addiction has taken over, and I've put it above everything else. Eventually, I got to the point where I said I have to make some changes. Men don't like to talk about mental illness. They don't like to ask for help. I'd like to see a much better support system for the men in our community. They need to know that they are not the only ones struggling. They need to know that help is available. The message I would like to share is that if anybody is struggling with addiction or mental illness, they are not alone. There is someone out there who is going through the same situation as what they are, and they have found a way to make changes. You can too. The peer support network here at Hiawatha Valley is unique to me. No one is ever turned away, and if we don't know where the answers, we look for resources to get those people the help they need. What is said in our meetings is strictly private. I just want people to know that we can help. You are not alone in your struggle. There is always hope.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much, both of you. And I like the way you ended that there, Mark, with you are not alone. There is hope. Definitely, definitely. I think it's very brave and courageous for both of you to not only participate in this project, but then come on the air and talk about it with us today, too.
Yeah, thank you.
So,
thank you.
And then, Joy, I did want to mention, like we mentioned before, public launch is where you can see the exhibit currently through the month of February. And then St. Mary's. It's going to be at St. Mary's in March, I believe, right?
Yes, it will be there for the entire month of March.
Okay.
At St. Mary's. And then I think it will have traveling legs after it's done at St. Mary's,
cool.
But I'm not quite sure about
awesome.
Those details.
Awesome.
Bill, I wanted to thank you for helping to publicize this exhibition. And I feel it's such a timely topic for our community. And thank you for devoting time to this.
Oh, you're welcome. It's something that I think is an important project. You know, I mean, this is a show about art, but art isn't always just pretty pictures. You know, there's often something behind it, and I think there's something very important behind this exhibit. So, yeah. So thank you for doing this. I think it's important. And I would love to see this show have legs and just keep going. So, you know, so let's hope that that happens. And if anyone's out there who might be able to, maybe there's another home for this show after St. Mary's, and maybe you're thinking about that, get in contact with Joy, or you can contact us here at KQAL, and we'll put you in contact with Joy. So.
I mentioned earlier how I was hoping that there would be a safe space in the exhibition for people to respond to it. And I did want to mention that Trish Johnson will be teaching a trauma-informed yoga class this coming Saturday at Manitou. And Trish has long experience with mindfulness meditation and yoga. And this is a wonderful opportunity for our community. If you haven't experienced any of Trish's classes before, this event is free and open to the public. I bring up Trish partly to mention this class, and also because Trish Johnson was instrumental in helping me shape this project. Early on, I was talking to her about it, and I kept telling her that I felt like it was incomplete, and she mentioned resilience, and a light bulb went off in my head, and that was the one concept that it had not occurred to me for some reason to begin talking about with the people participating in this project, but it's such an important concept. concept for anyone who suffers from mental illness.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think, and, you know, everyone involved in the project, but especially Annie and Mark, you know, being here with us today, I think you're showing resilience, you know, and I think that's really important for others to see, you know, kind of lighting the way, so to speak, you know. So I feel like no matter where we end this conversation today, that there's still so much more to be said,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
So, but I also think that that's part of the beauty of this project, too, is that it seems to have taken on a life its own, you know, and that, you know, things continue to evolve. You know what? I hope we do another show about this project in another 6 months. We'll just keep it going, right?
I love it.
Cool. All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you all so much for being with us today. I think, like Joy said, this is an important project. It's a community project. And I hope it benefits others as much as it seems to have benefited the people involved. So, yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Artbeat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.
Thanks again to photographer Joy Davis Ripley for joining us today on Artbeat. Joy's exhibit, Visible, Invisible, Life with Mental Illness, will be at public launch in Winona, Minnesota through the month of February. To find out where else you might be able to view Joy's exhibit, just go to Joy Davis Ripley Photography on Facebook. For more conversations on art, tune in to Artbeat Tuesdays at 12:30 right here on 89.5 KQAL. I'm Bill Stoneberg, and we've just heard from photographer Joy Davis Ripley on Artbeat. Joy Davis Ripley's exhibit is funded by a Southeastern Minnesota Arts Council Emerging Artist Grant, made possible by the voters of Minnesota through grants from the Minnesota State Arts Board, thanks to a legislative appropriation from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Is art an important part of your life? Find podcasts of Artbeat and all your favorite KQAL shows at kqal.org. Artbeat is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.